Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Well, hello and welcome back. This is episode 45 of Field Pass Hockey's American Hockey League podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for December the 8th, and we're here to give you a recap of the latest week in AHL hockey. Now, of course, as always, we're going to have the latest in AHL news, but we have, you know, it's December. We've got a real special present for you guys. We are joined by not one, but two special guests. Double the fun, I guess. First, we are in the booth with a longtime play-by-play broadcaster of the Hershey Bears, Zach Fish. Secondly, we're going to be headed down the road to Cleveland, where we are going to be talking to second-year assistant coach in Mark Letestu. But to start off the show, like usual, I have a rapid-fire question for you guys. And this was inspired by a conversation that I had with a friend while driving up to Cleveland this past weekend, surrounding a bit of Big Ten football lore in the $5 Bits of Broken Chair Trophy. It's a trophy that is awarded to the winner of the University of Nebraska and the University of Minnesota game every year. So my question is, who is your beat's biggest rival? And if you could make a trophy, kind of like the broken chair trophy for the winner of that rivalry series, what would it be?
Well, it's tough for me picking someone for the Griffins, but I think for the Wolves, it's pretty much a no-brainer to go with the Rockford Ice Hogs. I mean, in-state rivalry, Battle of Illinois, both fan bases don't even really like each other that much. So I think I got to go with that. And if we're gonna make a trophy for that, my offer is to kind of keep with the theme of the Illinois fight, and we'll call it the Lincoln Log.
And I'm Corey Swartz. I cover the Hershey Bears, and with our biggest rival being the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, I would give them a banner so that they could have something to hang up there because they don't have any Calder Cups. I try to be nice to my Penguins. I have a lot of Penguins friends, I'm sure, probably, you know, going to hear that, and they're gonna flip out. But it's true. They hang up banners for former players and coaches and things like that, but they don't have any Calder Cups yet. So that's what I would give them, is a banner for them to hang up in their rafters.
Shots fired. Well, hi, I'm Dina Weinheimer, and I am doing the banners correctly so far this week. But, you know, since I really don't have a beat, I'm just kind of the AHL correspondent. I have the entire league to look at, and I promise not to step on anybody else's beat here. So I'm going to head out west to Tucson, Arizona, and San Jose, California. Is this actually a rivalry? Maybe not. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm a big fan of urban legends. And there's an urban legend in both Arizona and California about something called the Sand Shark. So let's honor that. The winner of this series gets the Golden Sand Shark Trophy. Now, my runner-up was Tucson and Henderson. For that season series winner, I want to award something called Jackalope Trophy. Part jackrabbit, part antelope, 100% legend. While this isn't a legendary series, this Western urban legend needs, you know, it just somehow seemed appropriate in my book.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I have to be honest with you. What's up, everyone? My name is Jeremy, and I just have to tell you, I struggled with this one. When I saw this, I usually get really excited when I see the rapid fire question of the week. I like sighed. I'm worried about this one. Because Cleveland, you think of Cleveland and like just anti-Pittsburgh, anti-like Pennsylvania, everything, right? So it's easy to naturally like want to go that route. But for me, it feels like a more recency bias here in that the matchup between the Cleveland Monsters and the Grand Rapids Griffins brings out the worst in both teams, and I mean in every single way. I mean on the ice, I mean it's just like not good, right? And so hear me out. I've got either the roller coaster trophy, so a little bit of up and down, right? Or perhaps we take a page out of John Tortorella's playbook and we call it the toilet seat trophy for just how often these teams are up and down.
Wow. Given the quality of ice coming out of Western Michigan, I think toilet seat is more appropriate this time.
But I'm looking at it as, you know, Cedar Point, it's not in between, but it's located in between Cleveland and Grand Rapids. And a lot of Michiganders go there. So
they do a Michigan day. They do a Michigan day at Cedar Point, which I didn't know until I moved to the state of Michigan. So,
yeah, I mean,
I've never heard about it.
It works. It works.
And something that hasn't really worked between the two of them is love, and that's between the Toronto Marlies and the Belleville Senators up north in Canada. The Ontario battle rivalry has kind of a couple of different ways to put it, but I would simply put it as the battle of the 401, and I would like to award a piece of the 401 that separates the highway, that separates the two cities, but there's not really much left to that road right now. So, there's not really much to spare, so I'm going to go with the Belleville Senators and the Toronto Marlies.
We're going to be running quick on this show today because, once again, it is jam-packed full of, well, let's just call it an early holiday present for you guys. So we're going to move right on into some breaking news here. And we had a waiver claim earlier on the day that we're recording this on Tuesday. It's actually sending the captain of the Colorado Eagles, Jason Megna, off to the Anaheim Ducks. No word yet if he's going to be sent back down to the AHL or if he's going to be staying up in the NHL. But he has tallied 3 goals and 3 assists over 9 games this season with the Eagles, also appearing in 14 games with the Colorado Avalanche. He's an 11th-year pro, playing 162 games in the AHL with the Avalanche, the Vancouver Canucks, New York Rangers, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, totaling 10 goals, 15 assists, 25 points. You know, he has a wealth of experience, you know, during the Stanley Cup run for the Avalanche last season. He was a member of the Black Aces there. 415 career AHL contests with Colorado, Hershey, Utica, Hartford, and Wilkes-Barre Scranton. In total, 121 goals, 130 assists for 251 points. And then kind of on a personal note for Jason, maybe this might be a good move for him. It's going to get him at least closer to his brother, Jacob, who plays for the San Jose Sharks. And then moving right on in, we're going to keep looking at more news, but we're going to rewind and look at the weekly news recap.
All right, and starting off, we got our player of the week, and that's up in British Columbia. Christian Willanen has been named the Howie's Hockey Tape AHL Player of the Week in an impressive performance with Abbotsford last weekend against Bakersfield and Laval. He registered 1 goal and 9 assists through 4 games for a total of 10 points from the blue line.
And Dita over there on the soundboard, we've got a milestone alert. There it is. So with the recent signing of veteran defenseman Brandon Davidson, the Cleveland Monsters have now skated their, you guessed it, 400th roster player in team history.
And if you don't mind, I'll get you to cue that up one more time. On Saturday, the Lehigh Valleys will be playing their 2,000th game in the franchise history. They are the 9th AHL franchise to reach that milestone.
And bear with us one more time. We got to cue it up one more time. Big day for milestones this past Sunday in the American Hockey League. Just insanely busy day in the league for those. Ontario's Quinton Byfield netting his first career hat trick. Iowa's Zane McIntyre playing his 250th career American Hockey League game. And San Jose's Andrew Agostino scoring his 200th career AHL goal, coming with 46.8 seconds left in overtime. I think it's been a while since, I mean, I guess I've never seen that many milestones coming in 1 week, let alone one day.
And let's see if Zach can remember this name. This is kind of not such a high peak of a milestone, but it's one nonetheless. Bokanji Mama has been suspended for 4 games following a boarding incident on Saturday against San Jose. And for those of us on YouTube, you're going to see that's just not a good play. We've talked at length of that pre-show, and that's just right in the numbers the whole way, drawing the player right into the boards. It's a guy with a bit of a history, already been suspended once this year, and it looks like, here you go again. Here's number 2 for you. So he will miss games on Friday, December 9th, and Saturday, December 10th versus Ontario, also December 13th against the Coachella Valley Firebirds.
You know, it'll never cease to amaze me when I see a hit like that happen, and the instant reaction of the aggressor in the situation is, what? that they don't recognize that they just sent a guy face first into the boards.
But, wrote his numbers all the way into the boards. What did I do?
Correct. But I digress, because also in that same night, Jan Unik also got suspended 1 game for an instigator penalty within the final 5 minutes of the third period. So that resulted in an automatic 1-game suspension under the provisions of AHL Rule 46-21.
Moving away from the plays that you can't do, here's another one for the Eagles. They have acquired defenseman David Ferentz from the Chicago Wolves. Yes, those Chicago Wolves. In exchange for future considerations. Yes, those considerations. Ferentz had 1 goal and 4 assists through 14 games with Chicago this season, while on the other side, future considerations have had 0 goals and 0 assists through all games of the season.
Does the joke, you know, about future considerations just being just any future considerations joke, does it ever get old for anybody?
Nope. It has not for me. And we've been making those since the day one of this podcast. So.
Okay,
literally,
good.
Episode 1, Jake Lucchini, Future Considerations. Jokes were made, have been made since.
Isn't that literally the name of our first episode? Am I wrong?
Yeah, so I believe at this point we're contractually obligated to keep making Future Considerations jokes.
No, like I have to look that up. While
I know. Let's see who can look this up quickest.
I could be making it up.
This episode, believe it or not.
Let's see. What was episode 1? Oh, my gosh. My computer is so slow.
All right. Let's see. It's the race to the finish, folks.
Who gets there first?
I'm on the Apple Podcast page. So, shameless plug. You better give us a 5-star rating if you're on Apple Podcast.
Episode 1. It begins.
Cute. Cute.
Followed up by episode number 2, Lost in Grand Rapids.
Me too.
Shout out Jonathan Berggren.
Shout out Yanni.
Me too.
That is probably my favorite AHL story to come out since we started this podcast. Not gonna lie.
Absolutely. It's a good one.
Yeah. Well, someone who definitely wasn't lost while in the AHL is Shane Wright. We don't often talk about players being called up, but the saga is officially over. Wright was called up to the Seattle Kraken on December 5th in his AHL tenure. He had 4 goals through 5 AHL games.
I do just have one thing to say, and I think Andrew will agree with me here.
Justice for Potts, yeah. I mean, I'm continuing to lead that charge until the day that the Kraken give him the call-up. So, yeah, hashtag Justice for Potts, president of the movement since day one.
And I guess here's a fun fact for you here to round out our news segment here. Not sure if this has ever happened before, but for the second year in a row, the Henderson Silver Knights lucky launch, basically their version of the teddy bear toss. That goal that gets the Bears onto the ice was triggered by Jonas Ronbjerg. Again, 2 years in a row. I guess sometimes goal scorers really do have impeccable timing.
I have to ask, what happens, and I wish that Corey was on the show because I'm sure he has like some context of it happening maybe at some point. What happens if they don't score?
Oh, I have context for you because it happened my first year covering Cleveland.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Well, I guess it almost happened, but they did make an announcement. So if the goal was not scored, at least in Cleveland, they have a contingency plan that as the second intermission starts, they'll just tell everyone to just start throwing their stuffed animals. So it's kind of unceremonious, but they do have a way to get it onto the ice.
Good to know. Good to know.
So basically, skaters that have not yet played in their teddy bear toss games, just make the fans happy and score within the first period. That way nobody's stressed.
Yeah, please. Spare us the uncomfortability of people just being an announcement being made.
And I guess while we're talking about teddy bear toss, if you're planning on going to the one in Cleveland, double check the schedule. They just moved it from 6 o'clock to 3 o'clock that day on Sunday, December 18th. So don't show up at six because the game will be done. And now it is time for this week's special guest.
And today's special guest is in his seventh year behind the microphone as the voice of the Hershey Bears after previously serving as the voice of the South Carolina Stingrays. He won the Ken McKenzie Award during the 2020-2021 season as the AHL executive who most successfully promotes his or her club as only the third Hershey person to win the award, and previously spent time with the Fighting Saints of the USHL and is a graduate of St. Cloud State University. He's also filled in for a number of games with the NHL's Washington Capitals. Please welcome Zach Fish to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. That was a great introduction. I appreciate you guys chatting about the American Hockey League, and good to bring some Bears flavor to the show. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you for spending a little bit of your time with us this week. Obviously, like you said, I'm very happy to have a Hershey presence on the show. And I guess my first question to tee it off is, how did you get into broadcasting, and how has broadcasting in a big market like Hershey helped you to grow professionally?
Yeah, I mean, Hershey's the best spot to be in the American Hockey League in this position. And as a player, there's certainly an easy argument to make in that position as well. But to answer the first part of your question, always loved the game of hockey, grew up in Kansas City, knew I wanted to play professionally. And everyone hit their growth spurt as we became teenagers. I never got mine, and everyone kind of passed me in that ranks. So I realized I wanted to do something to stick around the game of hockey and make a career out of that. So I went to school at a different high school than by the district I was supposed to go to, as we had this kind of 21st century program where you could go and learn broadcasting and video production. And I went to Olathe Northwest High School and had an e-commerce program, an e-communications program. I was in the e-communications, got the broadcasting background, more behind the camera to start, and then in front of the camera, reporting on our high school sports teams. And I went, all right, I like this, both sides of it. I want to do this in college somewhere where they have a D1 hockey team. So I went to St. Cloud State, happened to find it in a search online. They had a good program. They had D1 hockey. It was Minnesota. Hockey was huge there. And wound up starting doing play-by-play for their men's and women's team my freshman year on the radio, and fell in love with that more so than any other side of it. So my degree is actually in television production. It's good to be well-rounded because there's only so few play-by-play spots. But first time I hopped on the mic in 2008 calling a hockey game, I was in love ever since.
Wow, that's amazing. The Bears have a long history of outstanding broadcasters, as I'm sure you know. Current Caps broadcaster John Walton and previous voices Dave Mishkin, who have also called championship seasons in Hershey. Have any of those voices kind of influenced you to come to Hershey? And is calling championship hockey in Hershey kind of on the bucket list?
Oh, yeah, at the top of it for sure, and get to that in a second. To answer your question, kind of goes hand in hand because I skipped the second part of Corey's question there. Like, Hershey has been instrumental in my development because, and Zach, to go into your side of it, you have those guys before you that were so good, and you have to have that high standard and raise the bar in everything you do. And it was kind of trial by fire for me getting thrown in. I got brought up from South Carolina. And my first week, you know, we had games. I came in Tuesday, we played on Friday, and you have to learn the history and tradition. And you're not cramming 80 plus years, a little less than that at the time, of history and tradition, you know, over one night. So I'm still learning. I still find things out about the team and talk to folks that went to games in the 50s and 60s. And we set our autograph night the other night. And, you know, I'm talking to fans and they're teaching me things about their favorite players from over the years. So a lot of those guys have influenced me because you listen to their calls and they're still historic. You know, John Walton's been a great mentor for me. I first connected with him when I was in South Carolina. That, of course, is in the Capitals organization. And he actually recommended me for this position when they were kind of looking at candidates and said, look, this is a young guy up and coming that certainly deserves a look and an opportunity. And he's someone that's called upon me to get my shot in the National Hockey League and some fill-in games and called upon me to fill in. So keep in touch with him a lot. He's obviously elite in everything that he does and the many guys before him, but I'm jealous. Those guys have got to call championships. I haven't tasted that success yet. You know, the dream for everybody, players, coaches, broadcasters, is to get to the National Hockey League full-time. I'd be lying and saying if that wasn't mine as well. But I want to call a championship or two in Hershey before that and raise another banner.
You talked about your call up to the NHL. The players have talked about it a little bit before on the podcast, but we've never heard from a broadcaster. What's the biggest difference between the AHL and NHL in calling a game?
There's a couple differences. I mean, the speed is certainly apparent, and you're looking at the best players in the world. So you want to be on your game because the puck moves so quickly. I mean, it's on and off Alex Ovechkin's stick in a blink of an eye, and you're just not quite used to that. Even with the best sharpshooters in the NHL, even with the Martin Furks of the world, you know, Ovechkin's just a different level. And it's amazing to see. The one side of it that is nice compared to the other spots in the American League is when I've been called up to do NHL games, my job that game is to call the game. There is none of the PR, none of the other gear side of it. You know, in the American League, outside of plugging into AHL TV, and then they control everything on their side audio-wise. You know, the dials of the board that you're hearing on the radio, I got to control that. When I need to go to break, I got to hit mute. You know, if there's something that comes up from a PR side of it or something that needs to be printed or a media pass or anything like that, you know, I'm handling all those things. So sometimes on game nights, I'm bouncing around, particularly a home game, from thing to thing to thing, and I get in the booth and I still have to do all the technical side of it. Maybe I'm getting a text from a colleague of something at a break I have to respond to for something on a PR side or a question, whatever it may be, from a media member. For play-by-play in the NHL, I'm just putting on the headset and literally my job is to call the game. There's someone that does the intermissions. There's someone that does the technical sides. You are just literally the talent, the play-by-play guy at that point. So it is certainly a luxury that those guys have to imagine I enjoy. And it allows you to hone your craft even more so and zone in and just focus on having the best broadcast. So I would be lying if I had say that's not a nice perk that in the times I've been up there, you take advantage of.
As someone who got her start in radio in a very small town and had to lug around all the equipment and do all the setup and everything herself, I can sympathize with that. 100%. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it definitely is unique. And, you know, a lot of times like AHL TV is the biggest thing. It's gotten so much better. And kudos to the AHL. The price point is great. You know, the feeds are getting better and better. There's still work to be done there. And I know the league trying to improve every year. But that was the most frustrating thing early in my career, whether it was in Dubuque in the USHL. Sometimes you go in the buildings and you plug in and it doesn't work. And it's not anything you can control. And you're getting message, and someone's calling you trying to fix it when you're already on the radio and you can't stop broadcasting, right? You got to call the game. It's still going on. So, you know, those technical gremlins, as John Walton used to call them, you know, certainly are one thing that I'm glad that the league has helped us eliminate as much as physically possible. They still creep up every now and then, but yeah, the gear has gotten smaller and smaller. I'm sure as we can all attest to over time, you know, I used to carry around a big box and used to be on a phone line. You know, now it's a small unit that fits in a case with a couple of headsets and a real easy briefcase to carry on the road. And we're all over the internet now. So it's definitely simplified in my decade plus doing this.
So I know a lot of broadcasters have like their own signature calls, you know, to use in different situations. Like, I guess my main inspiration behind this question will be like Bob McElligott in Columbus. You know, he has all these little quirky ways to call a goal, to announce a goal. Is that something that you do? And how much time do you spend just kind of away from broadcasting trying to think of those kind of things?
Yeah, I think you listen to guys all the time. You know, Bob, John Walton, others, you know, from the main names of Brendan Burks, Kenny Alberts, you know, Doc Emrick beforehand. There's so many good guys. You pick up little things from them and you add it in. Like the Caps have Joe Beninati on TV and like he is a wordsmith. And I swear, sometimes I sit there and I write down 15 phrases in about 5 minutes of things that I go, wow, that's a great way to say that. Or I never thought of that word. Or, okay, I've used that one before, but it hasn't been fresh in my mind in a while. You never want to directly copy anybody, but you're always learning from your fellow colleagues or just in your day-to-day life. You hear someone use a certain metaphor or verbiage for something. You think, that might work in the game of hockey. But for myself, I've never been necessarily a catchphrase guy. You know, John Walton in Washington has the good morning, good afternoon, and good night. And I know the fans love that, dating back to his days in Hershey. I guess I'll always be the sweet, cuddly mayhem guy. I wasn't expecting that to blow up the way that it did. I feel like I have to say that now going forward. It's kind of caught on as the unofficial slogan for the Hershey Bears teddy bear toss. I guess you made it when they make a shirt with something on it, you said. But I use how sweet is that because sweet for Hershey for overtime wins the last handful of years. I haven't done it this year. I honestly don't think I'm going to do it going forward. It's not something that I really ever intended to catch on. A couple people told me they liked it after the first time I did it, so I stuck with it. But we haven't won anything with it as far as championships or even gotten out of the second round of the playoffs. And we've had a weird couple of years with the pandemic. So I just decided, you know what? Whatever comes out of my mouth this year comes out of my mouth. We're going to go fresh and hopefully be the year the Bears raise a banner. But I do like some of the things those guys say. If you remember, like when I was in college, Randy Moeller, when he was doing play-by-play for the Florida Panthers, was saying the most ridiculous movie lines after the fact. So, sometimes that shtick really catches on, and there's some really good things out there that every once in a while you got to steal a little bit.
Well, I guess we'll just move right into this question then. So with the teddy bear toss coming up, do you kind of have a prediction for this year's figure? And do you plan on trying to top that phrase of sweet, cuddly mayhem? Or, you know, is that line officially kind of trademarked for this event, you know, after being featured on TV shows, featured on merch, things like that?
I guess I should have trademarked it. My wallet might be just a little bit thicker in that fact, but it was cool to see it on the shirt. I'll give credit to Matt Truss, who works for Lehigh Valley now. He was our old media coordinator for the Bears, still a friend. He actually tweeted that out when he was running social media for the Bears, maybe 2018. I remember seeing it at the time and going, that's a really good way to describe it. You know, I like that tweet, and just kept it kind of in the back pocket. I didn't know I was going to use it right when the goal was scored by Axel Janssen Fialbi this past year. But I knew I wanted to say it at some point because I had happened to, you know, looking for something, stumble across that tweet again a few days before our teddy bear toss last year and go, all right, I'll integrate that somewhere within the call or after the fact or, you know, whatever it may be when the guys are jumping in the piles. I don't know where I'll use it, but I'll use it. And the goal was scored and down came a giant teddy bear right below me. I remember flying through the air and that's what I said. So I didn't expect it to catch on. Like it has, I think it really does summarize the teddy bear toss well. So I don't know what else I'll come up with this year or what might sound good. I've been listening to a lot of teams. They're doing their teddy bear tosses. Traditionally, it's in December. Ours has been moved a little bit to January. Listened to a lot of calls, a lot of good one-liners from guys. And, you know, it's amazing what catches on sometimes. But I guess we'll have to go with that one this year. And knowing our fans, they are uber competitive. They want to win at everything we do, from Calder Cups to holding the teddy bear toss world record. So 52,000 and change was what we did last year. So I'm sure they would love to get 55 or 60 this year. You know, Corey might be able to tell you what the fan talk on the message boards is as far as a number goes, but you know, I'm hoping we just beat that record and continue to bring more and more smiles every year because it just gets more and more insane each year. And I don't know how we top it, but our fans are so generous that every year they rise to the occasion.
That's awesome. The Bears have a lot of big promotional nights coming up on the calendar this year. I know the Teddy Bear Toss is on the 29th. We've talked about it. Chris Bork's retirement jersey is on the 14th of January, and the return of the Bears Hall of Fame night on March 18th, taking the top billing, I guess. Tell us a little bit about how much it means to the community and the team for to have two classes of inductees, including names like Greg Mace.
Yeah, you 100% hit the nail on the head. It means a lot to our community, and we're glad we're able to bring that back because I think it just means a lot for the history and tradition, which this team is certainly rooted in so much history and tradition. We couldn't do it in 2020 because of the pandemic. Last year, we probably could have done a Hall of Fame night, but if you remember, we traditionally do it in December. We just weren't sure with what was going on with COVID, and then COVID popped up, and we wound up having to postpone a ton of games. And we in our right mind, with some of those Hall of Fame inductees being in their 80s and wanting to attend, couldn't fly them across the country and bring them in for that night with health and safety concerns at our forefront and the foremost thing in our minds. We couldn't do that, what we felt safely, and hold that ceremony. And we want to give them their day. So we had to delay it. We're adding in the class of 2022. Great to have them in there. And some really good players. You know, I called games with Freddie Kasivy, who's one of my color commentators for a few years. So really cool to see him and congratulate him after the announcement was made the other day when he was at the rink, popping in for a few things. You know, Keith Acoin was here scouting in Hershey recently. You know, a great honor for him. Brian Helmer was able to tell him in person before the announcement went out. Cool to come from a former teammate. So we're excited to welcome those that are able to attend. And then those that we've lost, some former players, writers, reporters like Greg. You know, Greg was a good friend. I work with his son, Kyle, every day, who's very similar to his father in a lot of ways. And, you know, Greg touched many lives and won the Ellerly Award, covered American Hockey League action for 40 years with class and dignity. So it's going to be a little extra special to have someone that I was super close with for just a few years going in to the Hall of Fame this year, and share that with Kyle since I know the family so well. But to your point, these promotions being back, the fans, the alumni being able to be involved, you know, it's definitely feeling a lot more like normal. I know we're still dealing with, you know, COVID in situations, and we're still dealing with being careful and cautious about staying healthy. But being able to have our autograph night the other day and see our fans and see people that I haven't been able to shake their hands or give them a high five or a fist bump, and see some of these young fans that are now growing like weeds, it's cool to catch up and do it again. So we're excited for what we have around the corner in 2023.
Yeah, I know. I'm especially excited about it. You know, hearing some teases about Hall of Fame night, some of the classes there. Can't wait for some of these events. I know I'm ready to go always, but like you said, it's a little more special to have these kinds of things back. But I guess we'll shift a little bit now to the team and the season at hand here, because the Bears have been just off to an electric start here. You know, minus Sunday's game, of course, which was, you know, its own situation.
We'll forget about that one, huh?
Exactly. Absolutely. But do you see like any particular players that stand out for you? I mean, the answer could be all of them, because it's been, you know, pretty well and tested team effort so far. And just what are your thoughts on the team, especially with a head coach like Todd Nelson taking over the reins here a little bit? How has he differed from other coaches, and, you know, it, just in your mind from what you've seen? I know you've seen a few coaches here in your time.
Well, Nelly commands the room, and we've had some real good coaches in my time here in Hershey, from Troy Mann to Spencer Carberry to, you know, most recently Scotty Allen. It's been a pleasure to work with all those guys, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if all them are NHL coaches one day. They certainly would deserve that. But, you know, Todd is experienced. He's won a bunch. As he's a little bit older now, you're not going to see him maybe like going out there and participating in the drills like Spencer Carberry would. He like to get in the mix a little bit, but he is a teacher of the game. He gets the best out of his players and demands excellence, which I absolutely love. You know, he came up to me and said, after we moved into first place in the league after beating Lehigh Valley last week, he said, "First place in the league, not bad, eh?" And I said, "Oh yeah, this is awesome." Well, long way to go, and we're nowhere near where we should be yet. So that's the encouraging thing. So I love that, right? There's no complacency, and he firmly believes, as do the Capitals, that winning, development go hand in hand. And that's what you need at the American Hockey League level and what is expected in Hershey. These guys are getting key opportunities. The Connor McMichaels of the world are getting to play power play and penalty kill and top line minutes and out there in late game situations. And it's not just about where guys slot. You know, I see the comments a lot of times, or they're passed along to me, "Why is this guy on the third line?" Well, he's on the power play. He's playing big minutes. He's learning, and he's continuing to earn his ice time, and he's going to get better and better. And, you know, a lot of times the lines rule where if you're playing well, you're going to get that ice time. So Hendrix LaPierre is a guy that has stood out to me. Even though you see him penciled in as the third line center, his ice time's been high. He's been trusted in power play situations on the second power play unit, which at times is kind of almost a 1B because the power play isn't necessarily where they want it to be yet, only hovering around about 18% and towards the lower half of the American Hockey League and just looking to find its groove a little bit. But Hendrix is a guy that I think has a really bright future. He needs to hone his craft at the American League level, and the Caps are doing the right thing, letting him do that this year. He's continuing to figure out the defensive side of the game more and more. He's cutting down on his turnovers. He's continuing to be relied upon in big game situations, and he's finding ways to put the puck in the net. You know, his goal on Sunday and the loss to Wilkes-Barre Scranton, he did it himself on the power play and made a great shot and created something out of nothing. And that's what you love to see. So he's got to continue to take steps with his play on the boards. He's got to continue to take steps with his defensive zone time, defensive zone play, and his ice time is only going to continue to go up. So he's a guy that, look, like Corey, you've seen it as someone that follows the Bears pretty closely, haven't had really that impact rookie outside the pandemic year with Connor McMichael, but haven't had that really big impact rookie that's put up 50, 60 points since the 15-16 season with Riley Barber and Travis Boyd. So he, to me, very well could be that guy. He's leading the team in points as of today. So he's a guy that's been fun to watch in the early goings among many.
Now, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but we're just going to kind of pull a little bit more information out of you here. You know, it has been, I guess, a relatively trying few seasons for the Bears, with a couple seasons with some really high hopes, unfortunately cut short. Now with a, well, compared to maybe the rest of the AHL, a relatively smooth start to the season. And of course, you have some big additions. How do you feel, or how do you view this group in contrast to the last few seasons in terms of how the roster is shaped and what they are capable of here?
Yeah, there's been some good Bears teams. I mean, the pandemic year was a lot of fun. That team rolled over everybody. It was just three teams they played, so it wasn't a good real example of it. But the 1920 Bears team, I firmly believe, had they been able to get through Providence in the playoffs, probably could have won a Calder Cup. Look, a lot of bumps in the road. There could have been injuries or call-ups, whatever it may be. But I thought that team had a little bit of everything, from the leadership of Matt Molson to the goaltending of Vanacek and Copley. It's a really good depth, but alas, wasn't meant to be with the pandemic. And, you know, you always sit there and wonder what if. But I like the makeup of this team. What I know, and I was chatting with Patrick Williams of NHL.com, the AHL.com, you know, he said sometimes the hardest thing for teams is to gel and find that cohesiveness early in the season. It takes teams a while to get there sometimes. And I think this Bears team has had that from the beginning. And it took a few games for them to get the systems. They had to simplify the systems a little bit to get the team on the right track after a 500 start. But since they've done that, you know, these guys have really bought in to what the coaching staff is preaching, and they're playing for each other. You know, it's a selfless group. It's a group that really likes playing with each other. There's a lot of high character guys and a lot of personality in the room. And sometimes I think that's half the battle when you bring in new pieces to the team, is just finding where everybody fits. But, you know, it's a group that doesn't care who scores the goals, and it's a group that loves playing with each other and seeing each other succeed. You can see that in the locker room, and that's what's been really apparent to me sitting here early December, you know, compared to some teams where you start to see that maybe February, like, wow, this group's really bonded and now we're rolling and the trade deadline's coming up. Maybe we're just a piece away. So what I like about this Bears team is obviously Hunter Shepherd was called up to the NHL, but you have a great goaltending tandem with Shepherd really kind of being the one to step up, with Zach Pacalli not far behind him. Throw out the last game, he had a 2.0 goals against average before that. So you have a great goaltending tandem. I like the makeup of the defense. Gabriel Carlson's been a real nice addition. Dylan McElrath's a veteran. And for me, the forwards, just the top dogs are still finding it. The Sam Anises of the world are looking to produce at the levels they have before. You know, the Mike Vecchione's been a little bit streaky, but he's leading the team or up there in points. And you get everybody rolling like a Mike Scarbosa, you're going to have a good group. So for me, a long way to go. There could be injuries, illness, call-ups, whatever it may be. But I like the team. I like the depth. I still think if there's a veteran add, Sonny Milano went up to the NHL, you know, it's for a goal scorer. And that's something since Riley Barber left, the Bears necessarily haven't had, be it five games of Daniel Sprong in the year that was cut short by the pandemic, a natural, I want the puck, I'm going to be your shooter type of guys. I think the one thing that maybe you would go out and address if you had to make the trade deadline today that this team could use. Other than that, I really like the makeup of it. I like the depth. I like the defense. And the coaching staff is certainly a group that gets the best out of its team.
As somebody who's covered the American Hockey, or I guess the Cleveland Monsters for a few seasons, it makes me very happy to hear that Gabriel Carlson is doing well over there and that he's continuing to succeed and develop a little bit.
Yeah, he's a good player. And I mean, you can see why as a first round pick. He doesn't have necessarily anything flashy about his game, but his defensive play really started standing out the first few games that you watch him. And as a broadcaster, you're calling the game, but first few games I watched him, you know, you're kind of waiting to see it. I think really as he's gelled with the team. You can see what he brings to the table. So not a guy necessarily that's going to be an offensive juggernaut, not a guy that I think is going to get any power play time for this team, but a penalty killer, real solid in his own zone. I mean, in Springfield, he had 9 blocks is what the coaches told me. They don't count that stat, obviously, in NHL, but he had 9 blocks in the Bears' 2-1 win at Springfield, including Martin Furk just trying to blow his leg off with a 109-mile-per-hour slap shot. So anytime a guy that's willing to do that, he can play on my team any day of the week.
Sounds like classic Gabriel.
Absolutely. And so for our last question, we usually ask players this sort of thing when they come on the show, what their individual goal song would be if they could have one. And naturally, since you know you're in a bit of a different role as a broadcaster, what would you pick if you had to pick one, or what's your favorite one that you've heard, you know, when you've called games for Washington? Because I know they do that sort of thing up there.
Yeah, I think there's a couple that I might pick. There's two that I like. So I love this band, Foxy Shazam. They just came back after being disbanded for a long time. They have a great 2010 self-titled album that is like glam rock. The lead singer kind of almost sounds like Freddie Mercury. And he sang with Macklemore on the song Downtown. So you may have heard him there. His name's Eric Nally. But to the point, they have a song Unstoppable. I'd probably have that as my goal song. Just one of my favorite jams from them. That whole album is great. Either that or there's plenty of good ones this day and age. Don't like the Blackhawks, but I always think like that upbeat Chelsea Dagger type of song is good. I really like this song. I think it was by a band called Temperance Movement that was called Take It Back or something along those lines. It's the perfect like Chelsea Dagger sound, but then I realized Take It Back for a goal, probably not good if you're all the video review this day and age. So I'll go with Unstoppable by Foxy Shazam. That would be my goal song. I like the individual goal songs, and I like that Washington's doing that as well. You know, as long as I could get a good Dangle Snipe and Selly in there, would love to hear that after scoring a big goal. But I guess I'll just have to yell about him instead.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, we're all a little partial to song 2 from Blur, just because that's what we've had for Hershey pretty much all time, as long as I can remember at least. It just naturally flows perfect for Hershey. So if they change that, I would be a little disappointed, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming anytime soon. I haven't heard any discussion of that between that and Puckhead's a chant that's obviously become a trademark of Bears games. You know, I think that's one thing that, you know, change is always scary, but I don't see that changing anytime soon. I would love us in Hershey to get a real actual goal horn. That's not my decision, but I love goal horns a ton. There's a lot of really good ones in the league, from Springfield to Hartford. You know, that's a minor complaint in the awesome history and tradition that we have here. That's just a personal preference on my part.
As long as it's not quite Lehigh Valley's one, after experiencing that for the first time in person, that's a little bit too much for me, to be honest with you.
There's only one time I've liked Lehigh Valley's horn, as obviously someone that works for a rival team, and that's when they, for whatever reason, someone wasn't paying attention or got trigger happy and blew it when Christian Juice scored a goal in the 2017 playoffs in that building. And for whatever reason, they blew the goal horn all the times. They didn't do it just once and go, whoops, I screwed up. They did it all 3 blows or whatever it was after Christian Juice scored. That's the only time I've liked that horn, that's for sure. Just no Wilkes-Barre horn. I hate hearing that thing.
Since I can say I've been to both those buildings now, I can say I agree with you wholeheartedly on both of those, honestly.
Yeah, they try to scare you. It's not quite the cannon in Columbus, but they try to scare you testing the horn out at about 4:30, you know, when there's very few people in the building in Wilkes-Barre. So I may have jumped my first couple of times there in 2016, but now I'm prepared and ready to go for it. But they definitely got me a time or two, like the cannon gets everybody.
I would imagine it would get me as well, honestly.
Yeah, as long as that's the only time I hear it that day, it's a good day.
Absolutely.
I'm desensitized to it. I was a season ticket holder in Columbus for a few years. It's all good.
Yeah, it just becomes part of your routine, right? So,
that's
a building I haven't been to in Columbus. Obviously, we love going to Cleveland and get to go this next couple of years. And the great crowd. So, yeah, Columbus would love to get there, watch Goudreau wheeling around and see if I can withstand the cannon.
All right. Well, Zach, I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking time here with us to answer our questions about the Hershey Bears, about your career and everything about that teddy bear toss coming up. So if people wanted to check out your broadcast or follow you on Twitter, where could they find you?
On Twitter, at Zach Fish. It's easy to say, a little bit difficult to spell. Z-A-C-K-F-I-S-C-H. My parents just wanted to make it very difficult for whatever reason with my first name. And then the last name has a random C in it. HersheyBears.com. There's a radio tab on there. All the information about our radio networks. We have a great radio network with, you know, five different stations and some games on television. So we're lucky to be an old school traditional market where the fans will tell me what they heard on the radio the night before, and I forgot I even said that. So those are the places to go, and HersheyBears.com and our social media has got all the info about upcoming games, promotions, and tickets too.
So our next guest is serving in his second year as an assistant coach with the Cleveland Monsters after a 13-year professional career. A truly versatile utility player, he skated in more than 800 games, including 255 in the AHL with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins and the Cleveland Monsters. In 2018 and 2019, he served as an alternate captain with the Monsters, finishing second on the team with 21 goals and 50 points. In the NHL, he had 567 games with Pittsburgh, Columbus, Edmonton, and Winnipeg before his retirement in December of 2020. And folks, it didn't take long for the Columbus Blue Jackets to come calling again, this time as a development coach with a quick promotion to the Monsters assistant coaching role. We'd like to welcome none other than Mark Letestu to the Holy Grail podcast. Mark, welcome on in.
Yeah, quite the introduction. Thanks. I feel like I got to live up to this now.
All right. So to start off, Mark, when you moved into coaching, it was a pretty quick ascension from a developmental coach for the Columbus Blue Jackets to an assistant coach for the farm team in Cleveland. Just a little over 2 months between the announcements. Now in your second season, how was that transition for you, and how do you feel that you've adjusted into your role?
Yeah, it didn't exactly go as it was drawn up. 2 months, as you said, a change in position. And COVID had kind of changed the world with vaccinations. Just a position had opened up. And, you know, I'd always known that I wanted to coach. You know, I had coaches previously kind of tell me that I might be good at it. And as you said, I'm only in my second year, so I'm still trying to find my way. I'm still trying to find my method of communicating, my way of finding trust with guys. And as a player, you're always evolving year to year, and I feel the same as a coach, trying to learn as much as you can from, I guess, experiences and dealing with guys, and then leaning on the other members of the staff and past players. So you're always trying to make adjustments. So far, so good, I think. They had me back for a second year, hopefully a few more years after, so I'm doing all right.
Mark, you've already served under two different head coaches in Cleveland. It was Mike Eaves. Now it's your colleague in Trent Vogelhuber, who was promoted to that spot last summer. What differences in coaching styles have you found between the two? And does it change how you approach your job?
It doesn't change necessarily the way I approach it. They're definitely two different minds. Not good or bad, just different. They see the game differently. They communicate differently. And it's kind of unique for me. I get to see two coaches at two very different stages of their career. Mike on the very end, who had, you know, 30 years of coaching experience across all levels. He was such a wealth of knowledge for me. Just he had so many stories, and he was so willing to share with me, which was excellent. And then Trent now, I mean, he's in year one as a head coach, so I get to see somebody at the very beginning. See him go through some experiences for the first time. I get to be a sounding board for him. So it's unique for 2 years to be with two different people, and have both been opportunities for growth for myself.
And obviously we know that it comes with the territory of AHL hockey, but the Monsters have definitely had their fair share of roster shakeups this season. At one point there was a surplus of skaters, and now spots are needing to be filled with guys on professional tryouts and new contracts. So obviously with all Columbus's injuries and these call-ups, as a coach, how are you navigating this? And does the coaching staff get any real input on who gets called up in those moments?
Yeah, there's input. Everybody, whether it's the GM or the coaching staff, there's always input. Everybody has kind of opinions, and we make that decision together on who fits what for our team. But the American League, as far as losing players and gaining players and injuries and call-ups, it makes it one of the best, I guess, laboratories for a coach. You get to see just about all situations, and you really have to learn on your feet and make sure that your structure is in place so that these guys can seamlessly move in and out of positions. Because ultimately, if you're playing really well, you're going to lose your players. That's just the nature of our business. We've had a lot of guys, at least two different players this year, were leading the league in scoring at the time of the call-up. So it's as success happens, players move on, and that's our job. We want to move on as many players as possible that so that Columbus can be successful, and that it makes it fun for us. You're always switching and find combinations, and as much as you'd like to win night in, night out, it is about giving other players opportunities and most of it, hopefully, for their careers.
Now, I want to kind of dive deep into the roster here for this season. First of all, we're going to look at the forwards. Now, there's a nice mix, I think, of some young NHL prospects and some solid AHL talent. You know, on the Monsters team, you have everything from the long-term, I guess you could call him the sheriff of the forward core in Brett Gallant, all the way down to, you know, the rookie Russian phenom in Kirill Marchenko, which, last I checked, is still up with the Jackets, but he's basically spent the season in Cleveland. Can you just kind of tell us a little bit more about the forwards and your assessment of that group now that you're about a quarter of the way through the season?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is obviously the offensive production. Last year, we were a team that really didn't score, and we had to work very hard to score goals. This year, we've been a bit spoiled. It's come pretty naturally to us, whether that's some players taking a step in year two, three, like Carson Meyer and Trey Fix-Wolanski, or a player such as Emil Bemström, who's come back to us from a few years in the NHL, and Marchenko. We didn't have offensive players like this that really, really were game changers and game breakers. And you can see it show up in whether it's our scoring leaders and even on the power play. The power play has been, it's had a really good jump this year. And you have to credit a lot of those players for taking a step. But it's been a lot of fun to have offensive weapons. You know, as a coach, it makes you look a little smarter when they can, you know, break a game. Maybe you're not in one, not playing as well, and they just have the ability to score a goal from distance or make something out of nothing. It's made our year definitely more exciting, and I think we're in the position we are in the standings currently because of the strength of those forwards.
Any surprises out of that group so far?
Well, for me, I mean, Kirill, he was a thing of myth. You know, you kept hearing about Kirill Marchenko for like 3 years, and all you could see was the occasional KHL highlight. So you never know how that's going to transition, you know, in his first year here. And obviously, if you look at his numbers, he's taken off, and now he's in the NHL because of it. But his personality, if you guys ever get the chance to talk to him or meet him, he's such an engaging young man. He's absolutely a hockey nerd in the most endearing kind of way. He comes in night after night wanting to talk about hockey and wanting to improve his game. And he's set the bar really high for himself in his career. So he's been a surprise. He's been fun to work with. And I hope I don't have to work with him anymore. Hopefully he gets hot in the NHL and we never see him again.
And then as we move on to the blue line here in Cleveland, it looks like a very young but overall a strong group. How do you feel that overall defensive core is performing so far under the new assistant coach, Mike Haviland?
Well, Mike's done a fantastic job, and I have to say that from the standpoint that he's lost four guys to the NHL almost immediately, and to a man, all four or five or six of the recalls have contributed at the NHL level. And again, that's our job. That's our job, is to have as many guys contribute on the NHL stage. And even, you know, last night, you know, up and looks like an NHL defenseman. And that's somebody who started in our 5-6 pairing. So I think it speaks to the depth. But for me, the more unique 18-year-old, I guess now 19, in David Juracek, we haven't had anybody that young and that highly, you know, the high pedigree of a top five, top six pick. So we take him being here very seriously, how important he is. It's a huge honor to, I guess, see him at this stage and hopefully put him on the right path towards being a long, long-term Columbus Blue Jacket.
Now, I'm not sure if you can answer this one or not, but speaking of injuries and losses on the blue line, Dylan Simpson's been out since late October. Are there any updates on him? Is he looking to be coming back anytime soon?
I don't think he's coming soon. Dylan is such a important. You know, if you look at our roster and kind of the unique thing in the American League, we don't have very many vets. You know, I think last game week two, we signed Brandon Davids, Brett Gallant. So we're very young. I think to have him back is important. His presence around the room is nice, but we'd love him back on the ice where he can be kind of a visual guide for some of our players.
And Mark, I was really curious to talk to you both timing wise and, you know, just in general, because I know you spent a lot of time with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins during your playing career. And it was right over a time with some really heated battles with the Hershey Bears as the, you know, kind of resident Hershey, you know, Pennsylvania guy, especially on the, you know, weekend coming up where you're going to be coming to Hershey to play the Bears with the Monsters. What do you remember of your time as a member of the Penguins and some of those heated playoff battles back in 2008 and 2009?
Yeah, there's a couple of moments that stick out. You know, I think the 1 year we played Hershey 20 times, whether it was we had the preseason, a couple games, and then I'm pretty sure we played another 12 in season and then a 7-game playoffs. It just, you knew the guys by first name, you know, as opponents. I'm pretty sure Alexander Drew had 70 goals that year. There's some good players there, but it's funny. It's, you know, we're going up for a 3-3 and it's Sunday afternoon at Hershey. And they only play Sunday afternoon games at 3-3s. So even as a coach, we're heading into Hershey where I know the environment will be hostile. You know, they'll have the BEARS Bears, Bears, Bears chant going, hopefully not very often, but it's a fun community, especially for the American Hockey League and how they support their team. And that really hasn't changed, it seems like, from my playing days.
No doubt that that this weekend will be a lot of fun in Hershey and obviously a challenge for the Monsters. So looking forward to that one. But, you know, as a Blue Jackets fan myself, I have to tell you, Mark, that maybe one of the funnier moments of recent memory is the clip of you jogging down the runway to the bench. And you know the way this is going, too. Cameraman in tow. After Cam Atkinson took his own shot off of the crossbar in warm-up. So what can you kind of like tell us about that night? If I remember correctly, that was your return to the ice with Columbus after re-signing with Columbus. So just fill us in. Were you chirping Cam at all? Like, just walk us through what that night was like.
No, I didn't have any time to chirp Cam. I was walking to the rink to watch. And my phone, I think it was a 7 o'clock start. It's like 7:52 and my phone's ringing. It's Bill Zito. And, you know, I thought, you know, maybe they're sending me down or something, but pick it up. And he's like, hey, where are you? I said, well, I'm walking. He says, can you get here and how fast? I'm like, oh, well, I'll be there in a couple minutes. He says, you might have to play. So I got down there and I honestly didn't warm up or anything, threw my gear on and I was running just to get to the rink because I had to make it onto the ice for the start of it. You know, and then I think Anthony Duclair maybe had a turnover in the first shift or two, and he didn't play the rest of the night. So I played way more than I thought I was supposed to, and I got through it. But it was – I've had a few memes, and that's one that's kind of fun. But it was very cool to get back to the NHL with Columbus at that time. You know, quick turnaround. Sometimes you don't have to think about much, and you play better games because you're not too worried about it. But it was definitely a hectic few hours.
Well, continue talking about your playing days a little bit here, Mark. You had the unique opportunity and the privilege to share a locker room with both Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid. Now, I won't make you pick between the two of them, but I also will. Are you brave enough to say here tonight who was more fun, at least, to play with?
Well, I got to play with Connor. It was nice. I mostly watch Sid from the bench, so that was, you know, but being in Edmonton and playing on the power play with Connor and seeing, again, his growth. I was there for his first 3 years of his career, seeing him go through the injury with the collarbone and then coming back and becoming a very young captain. And I just got to see more of Connor's growth as a young man, which is pretty special, where by the time I got to Sid, he'd already won a Stanley Cup. And even though he was 2 years younger than me, he was mature and beyond his years. So just the interactions with Connor, were a little bit different than the ones with Sid, where I was a rookie and, you know, just trying to stay out of the way.
No doubt, no doubt. And so, I mean, the one thing kind of like going back to, I mean, you're on a bench with Trent Vogelhuber. You've worked with a lot of development guys and Derek Dorsett, and now you've got Rick Nash heading up player development for the Blue Jackets franchise. And I've got to ask, just what's it like? I mean, there are so many CBJ alum who have stuck around, whether that's with the franchise in Cleveland or up with the main squad in Columbus. So what's that relationship like? Like, what's it like being a Blue Jackets alum, and is that group still pretty tight? And just how awesome is it for you to be doing this work with so many of your former teammates?
Well, I would have to credit Jody Shelley for keeping the alumni group as close as it is. He did a lot of work, whether it's staff skates, obviously that I'm not really much part of because I'm here in Cleveland, but just being a part of the text thread, he keeps them all very connected, whether it's golf outings or shinny games. So Jody does credit, and we're up to 15 or 15 now guys that have stuck around post-career. And I don't believe any of them are from or born in Columbus, you know, guys that have adopted it as their home, fallen in love with it as a player, much like I have. And I think community as a member of the team, but all for my kids to school. My wife now is a Buckeye. She's going to school. We're invested in the community as possible. I never got to win anything as a player, so it's kind of now an extension of my playing career, trying to help the Columbus Blue Jackets win. And it's very important to me, and I know the other guys involved with the team now.
Speaking of that playing career, you had quite the playing career in the AHL. Was there any specific goal or memory that you had during that time?
My last year in Cleveland is probably my most, what I'm most proud of, because I didn't want to be there. You know, I wanted to stay in the NHL. And, you know, my career was kind of going the opposite direction. It was starting to slow down. The game was speeding up, and I wasn't a quick player. So it was humbling to have to go back to the American Hockey League and basically prove your worth, prove your value. And I actually landed on my feet in a pretty good spot. At the time, John Madden was the head coach and Steve McCarthy was here, and Trent wasn't coaching it. He was actually a teammate for the first little bit, but then he got the coaching job shortly thereafter. And, I have to credit that staff for not, just letting me be the other guy and kind of casting me aside. They coached me. They helped me be able to turn that year into making a training camp the next year. So the American Hockey League has always been a springboard for me, whether it was spending 3 years in Wilkes-Barre, really honing my craft, trying to get or rehabilitate my career, coming back as a later player and helping some young guys. So it's been a fun league to be a part of. Now as a coach, it's still given me some rewards, just being involved in it.
Well, Mark, this has been just an amazing interview. And as someone who covered the Monsters for the past three seasons, this has just been great to talk to you. But we have one more question. We kind of like to end the interview on a bit of a fun note. So, you know, it was no secret that you were a fan of the mustard packet on the bench in your playing days. First, did you have a favorite brand of mustard? Second, how did that work? Did, you know, the training staff carry those from arena to arena, or did you just swipe a few from the catering table?
The funny part of all this is, so I used to drink pickle juice. It was something, mm-hmm. again, I was just a cramper, just one of those things where I couldn't get enough salt or electrolytes in my body and I would cramp. So I was always a pickle juice guy in Edmonton. And this was my first or second exhibition game with the Jets. So I hollered at the trainer, Rob Millett, and I was like, hey, do you have pickle juice? He's like, we don't have pickle juice, but guys here have had success with mustard. What? Yep, I swear by it. The guys here have had success with it. So I said, okay. So he threw me the mustard packet, and the first time I ever took mustard on the bench is meme, and now I am the mustard guy. So that's the only – well, the first time it had happened – and then from there, I got out of the game and my phone was on fire and I couldn't figure out why, because I didn't play particularly well. So that was the first time I'd ever done it. But I guess if you research it a little bit, it helped. You know, the cramps went away, but it's something with the vinegar involved in it. But I don't mind mustard. it was funny because guys said I should have tried to turn that into some sort of marketing campaign. And there was one deli and some mustard. So it became fun. But yeah, it wasn't something that I commonly did. It's just something that got caught on camera.
Funny how social media picks up on that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, of course. Cameras everywhere.
Especially these days, for sure. Well, Mark, we just want to thank you once again for taking your time and coming on our podcast and sharing more about this really young, exciting team in Cleveland and these prospects for Columbus.
Oh, I appreciate it. No, thank you very much for you guys taking the time to be on a league that could probably use a little bit more. So I appreciate getting on here.
Absolutely. That's what we do here on the Holy Grail. We're all AHL and we love to share these stories. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to go ahead and move right on into who's hot and who's not. Our weekly look at who's coming up, who's rising in the American Hockey League, and who might need some extra help here. I'm going to go ahead and lead this off with the Atlantic Division, and I'm talking the Lehigh Valley Power Play. Again, I don't know why I keep looking at unlikely sources here, but guys, listen to this. Over the last four games, they are 6-10 on the man advantage. 60%! Easy math. On Saturday alone, Tyson Forster, Adam Brooks, and Elliot Denoyer all scoring power play goals. Granted, it wasn't a 6-4 loss against the Charlotte Checkers, but 3-4 on the night. Again, 6-10 across four games. They are hot right now. And not, I hate to pick on them again. This is, I feel like this is getting old, but the Hartford Wolfpack guys at home, they have one regulation win in 10 games in their own building. I mean, I know they're struggling, but yikes, give your fans something to get excited about there.
Yeah, I almost am beginning to wonder if we should just like grant Hartford the knot in the Atlantic in perpetuity right now, because it just feels like until that happens, you know, we're gonna rag on them every week. But when you look at the North, I mean, what's hot is you look at across the board, all seven teams, it's the offense, guys. Half of the AHL's 10 highest scoring teams reside in the North Division. So take, for example, Belleville. Belleville's three matchups this weekend, combined goal total of 24, averaging 8 per game. And that's only because they only had 4 goals total in their matchup on Sunday, 10 goals in both their Friday and their Saturday matchups. So, needless to say, you're not going to have to look very far for offense in a matchup between North Division foes. I think we all should be grateful that I decided to not go out on a limb and continue my math teaching career choice that I had when I started college, because I had to bust out the calculator for this one. So on average, teams in the North have netted an average of 74.14 goals this season, with the Central being the second closest at 65.29, so almost a whole 10 goals per team more than the second place Central Division in goal scoring. So a lot of goals being scored there, and so that's a pretty easy and seamless transition into who is not hot, and that is the defense in the North. Defense in the North simply said Zach's favorite thing. They've simply said, we are not doing this. We're not doing this. We're not showing up to play. And to the same effect, I mean, obviously when there are a lot of goals scored, they have to be scored on someone. And that's happening. That's happening pretty frequently. So on average, each team in the North has given up 70.29 goals. And the next closest is, again, the Central at 65.57. So on average, each team has given up 5 more goals in the North than they have in the Central. And that's bottom of the barrel there, folks. It's not looking – it's exciting hockey in the North. You're going to see goals. Don't think they're going to have to worry about whether or not they're going to be able to throw things onto the ice in Cleveland on the 18th. I think that's pretty safe.
Good.
All right, and I'm moving on to that number 2 division in both goal scoring and goals against. We're going to get into it with these guys. Starting off with the hot, it's got to be Sammy Walker of the Iowa Wild. After they took that big old goose egg in the first of their weekend set to Chicago, the Wild exploded for 7 goals to blow the Wolves out of the water. And it was Walker leading the way with a goal, 2 assists, and a fight with Jameson Rees for the Gordie Howe hat trick.
The three-point effort also pushes Walker into the top spot for the rookie scoring race in the AHL with 21 points in 20 games. And, you know, I just got to say, it's not bad for a seventh-round pick back in the 2017 draft. It may have taken him a little while, but this kid's got he's got the wheels going underneath his career. There he is. Look at him go. I don't know about you guys. I love seeing a good scrap, especially when it comes to Iowa. They're quite known for it. But keeping up with the knot, you know I get ragging my own beats a lot, but it's got to be Grand Rapids. I mean, and I can only go after them for so long, but that's three straight losses for them now, including a two-game sweep in Van Andel Arena at the hands of the Stars. And the combination of a young blue line and goaltenders that really just kind of aren't getting the job done have put them pretty firmly in the basement with, oh, hey, my other beat, the Wolves. And I understand that injuries and the call-ups and everything, but currently there's only three other teams in the AHL who have gotten scored on more than the Griffins, and they've all played more games than them. There's just too much talent on this team to already be out 5 points out of a playoff spot, but right now they're a big old knot.
Yeah, and you know what? For me, it's got to be Calgary, and give me them for the hot, and they have been absolutely on fire. I got to show this clip here by Clark Bishop, if you're on your YouTube, the good old Newfoundland boy. The looks are deceiving with that home record. We won't really talk about that 6-4 kind of thing that they got going on, but 11 out of their past 13 games have been wins. There was only one of those losses was actually through regulation, so that tells you something right there. Matthew Phillips has 15 goals and 15 assists through the past 20 games. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. If he can keep that up, boy, oh boy, what a season for him and what a season for the Calgary Wranglers. I had to give him that little credit there. But the Pacific Division, you got to look the other way and look down at the bottom of the standings. Boy, oh boy, Bakersfield, you're up. I mean, I've talked about San Diego. I've talked about Henderson. Now it's your turn. I mean, 2-8 through their past 10, 30th in shots for, fourth most shots against per game. We're not even going to go into the goals for and against. Only Hartford has scored less in the first period. Their last for second period goals. 13 players are in the negative. Most of them are barely positive. I mean, absolutely abysmal as of late, and something needs to change there. But don't worry, San Diego, you're not off the hook. I dug deep into you last week, and I feel bad going in for seconds. I see that six-game losing streak there, buddy.
I did tell you about Calgary, did I not, Zach? We wanted to bury them early. I said, don't sleep on this team.
You know what? You certainly did, and things have changed a lot, and good on them.
I know we sometimes will spend a minute or two on every show talking about uniforms. I don't know what it is about watching that clip just now. The Wranglers uniforms are sick.
I love them.
I enjoy those a lot.
There it is. Let's see them.
Those
again.
Do look really.
They're just
good.
Sharp. They're
I
just
do like
sharp.
Their whites more than their reds. Honestly. I think it's the stripe down the arms. I think that's really what does it for me.
Yeah, this is a good look, I think.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it.
Zach's not a fan. Oh, no.
Well, he wasn't a fan of the team to start either. But maybe, you know, maybe he'll come around on the uniforms like he did on the team. So we're just going to keep chugging right along. You know where the teams are kind of standing here in terms of their performance, but how does that translate to the standings? We're going to take a look in the race for the Holy Grail. And again, I'm going to kick it off here in the Atlantic Division. Now, guys, the Atlantic Division continues to be so close. And after briefly losing their spot at the top of the division, the Providence Bruins won a pair of games to open a 3-point lead on the Hershey Bears and the Bridgeport Islanders, both suffering losses over the weekend to stay at a nice even 30 points. Those losses actually were enough for Charlotte and the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins to gain some ground in the division race, while the Lehigh Valley Phantoms and the Springfield Thunderbirds are, I guess you could say, hanging around at, well, the bottom. But below them, sitting on the ground, is the Hartford Wolfpack, mirrored in a 5-game ouch, losing streak. Hershey and Providence don't meet up until the end of the month, but the way it's going, that is absolutely going to be must-see hockey to close out 2022.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know, when you look at the North, it's been very stagnant. It's been very, very status quo, and we finally got a little bit of movement, but not even holistic movement. It's in the points percentage, which we don't talk about very much this season, but the reality is the Cleveland Monsters now have just a shade higher of points percentage than the Rochester Americans after taking 3 out of 4 points this weekend against the Amherst. And so Cleveland, if they stay on pace, could take over that second spot soon. I think we're going to spend a lot of time looking at that 2-3 spot, talking about who's going to compete for that second overall seed in the North, because it seems like things are pretty comfy here in the North where they are.
But over in the Central, it's been very status quo over the last week. There haven't been any changes since last time we've met. Milwaukee is still top dog, with Texas and Manitoba trailing and right on their tail. Over in the middle, you got Rockford and Iowa holding those next spots, and we've kind of talked about it before, but, you know, if anything happened right now, it looks like your boy's not covering any playoff hockey, because you got Grand Rapids and Chicago holding down those last two spots in the Central. It's there's kind of a gap there between them and Iowa. It's not looking great, guys.
5 of the top 8 teams in the West are in the Pacific Division, but, you know, looking at the Pacific's specifically, Colorado is still flying high with an 8-2 record through their last 10 games. Calgary giving chase with 4 straight wins, and going down the list, all these teams are on winning streaks, by the way. Ontario, San Jose, Coachella Valley, and Abbotsford. And looking down here at the bottom, it's Tucson, who's lost 3 straight games. Bakersfield, who's crashing and burning. Henderson, who, get this, actually got worse since we last talked. Their record now is 6-15-1. But boy, San Diego, they're trying their best to stay at the bottom with a 6-16 record this season. And I just want to say San Diego and Henderson are playing two of the best teams in the Pacific Division this weekend. So grab your popcorn.
Hey, guys, I got something for you.
Oh.
We have a previous podcast milestone alert. You want to see? I mean, this is like a mix between milestone alert and breaking news.
Let's get into it.
We have Will Bitten, first NHL points.
There it is. I love the celebration.
Come to the pod, guys. Come to the pod.
Good things happen. Bergeron scored tonight. Bitten's got his first NHL assist. Look at him. He's fired up. The boys are fired up for him. What a beauty.
And then we'll see another nice view of this here real quick. Nice eyes, quick on the feet. Yeah, that was just such a nice,
beautiful. The seeing eye
pass.
Just
he makes that play happen too behind the play.
He fired it, but, you know, he's a good team player, so.
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful. I just had to bring that up. I got the alert on my phone that that happened. Like, oh, I need to bring that up to you guys. So, yeah, just congratulations, Bitsy. Great job. Glad that we could have a hand in the Will Bitten story here, I guess. All right, so we're going to go ahead and move on into our choices for the game of the week. And, you know, Corey helped me out with a lot of this Atlantic Division coverage on this podcast. So thank you so much, Corey. And as he put it, one for every day this weekend, all featuring the Bridgeport Islanders. They're going to look to make their way atop the standings if they can beat Hershey and Providence in 3 straight games, home and home with Providence on Saturday and Sunday. That point spread will make or break this for Bridgeport if they win or lose these games. If we're Hershey, all we can do is just sit back and hope for a regulation split.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough out here in the North to not exhibit a little bit of beat bias, but But this weekend, I mean, it's going to get tough for the Monsters. The Monsters have gotten lucky in being able to play mostly North opponents and have been able to kind of coast to some wins there against really shoddy defense. And so that's not going to happen this weekend when they match up with Wilkes-Barre Scranton and with Hershey. I mean, it's hard to pick between those two games which one I'm most looking forward to, but I think it's got to be Hershey. Hershey has just played the absolute most shut down D this season. And when you take a look at Cleveland's offense, I mean, something's going to have to break here. And if you're a Monsters fan, you're certainly hoping it's going to be the blue line of the Bears. But folks, I got to tell you, that Bears blue line and their goaltending is a real deal. This is going to be quite the matchup. This is a litmus test for Cleveland. You might be okay in the North, but let's give your fans something to see here. Are you going to be competitive when it gets time to face off in the Calder Cup playoffs?
And for me, I'm going a bit – yes, I'm sticking to my beat here, but I like the intriguing matchup this weekend between Chicago and the Texas Stars. And I know this kind of has the makings of a beatdown. You got Texas who can't stop scoring, and you got Chicago who can't stop giving up goals. It has all the makings of a beatdown, but – I wouldn't sleep on Chicago here. You know, they're 5-3 on the road as compared to 1-7-2 at home. I guess this team seems to play more loose on the road, and I think they can be a problem for the Stars if they're not careful.
And you know what? For me, I'm going to go with the probably closest matchup in the Pacific Division, and that's between Manitoba and Abbotsford. If you look at the Pacific Division coming up this weekend, Ontario and Tucson will battle. San Diego and Calgary will battle. Henderson and Colorado will battle. These are all like, it's like 1v32 out there. And you know what? Manitoba has been really good so far this season. Abbotsford, you know what? They got their stripes. They're in a pretty hefty top end of the division. So it's going to be a good game coming up this weekend.
And if you're looking to watch an AHL free game this week, well, the league has you covered with the San Diego Gulls versus the Calgary Wranglers. That kicks off Sunday at 12 Pacific, 1 Mountain, 2 Central, 3 Eastern. Thought I'd make it easy for you. And again, that's free on the AHL TV this Sunday. So just go to ahltv.com. No purchase necessary, but an AHL TV account will be required.
And also, we have a live AHL action on the Field Pass Hockey app. Their last series proved nothing, even a 1-1 split. Oh yeah, both these teams looking for revenge in the Charlotte Checkers and the Lehigh Valley Factory. Brother, it's a 7:05 start on Friday and a 7:05 start on Saturday. You'll still want to tune into the game. You can download it on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store.
We need this energy every week.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might be the promo voice from now on here at this point.
Yeah, how fast can we – how hurt do you think Harding's going to be if we replace the intro with your souped-up voice that you just did just now?
It's all about those ratings, baby. I get paid by the click.
I don't know how to move on from that.
You don't. You don't. You sit in it. There's no movement.
Okay, that's it, everybody. Bye-bye.
Live right now, do you think you'd give me a raise if I reread that promo?
If you can get a hold of them, let's do it. Good luck, though. Yeah, I don't really know how to transition into this. I know this has kind of been a whirlwind outside of our interviews here, but yeah, what a great show. We're just going to finish it off here with a bonus round. And this is one that I'm calling We're Going Streaking. We're talking about streaks here. Yeah, cheesiest thing ever. Introduction, just ugh, whatever. Anyway, so my question for you in this week's bonus round is, can you name either the player or the amounts of goals for the current longest goal scoring streak in the American Hockey League?
I know there's one in Cleveland, but I don't think it's the longest. And if it is, then it's a short list.
I think it is a short list. Shorter than you think. My gut's going to say Matthew Phillips, and I'm going to go with him as my answer.
I mean, he's been great. This is the only one I know of for sure. Unless if I'm wrong, I'm going to feel embarrassed. But I'm going to go with Yonah Luoto in Cleveland. He's got 4 goals in his last 3.
I remember hearing this name. I think Pat Williams posted something about this. I'm going to go with Anthony Richard.
All right. Well, I guess Andrew might have been the closest, but Anthony Richard's streak ended on November the 2nd. Right now, the longest. And Andrew, your cohort in Deanna McFerrin is going to be disappointed because it's John Sebastian D. Over 5 games played, he has 5 goals. Currently, the longest goal scoring streak. But back to Jeremy's point, I guess we can go ahead and do this real quick. What's the highest number of goals that's currently on a streak? Jeremy was very close with his guess. Not that player, but if you can name who has the most number of goals. Or the number.
In a streak right now?
Currently in a streak. It is a 4 game streak.
Oh man.
I'll go Matthew Phillips again.
I mean, ride the hot hand. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Oh, my gosh. Well, if I was close, he just threw me for a loop. Because now I'm like, is there somebody in Cleveland? Who am I missing? Is he currently?
It's an active streak, but he's not currently on the Cleveland roster.
It's either Trafix Wolanski. It's Trafix Wolanski. No, he's
got something. It's got to be Marchenko.
No, because he didn't score. He had an assist the other night, but he didn't score a goal.
It is Trafix Wolanski on a 4 game.
Yeah, but he's not streak. Active though, is he?
No, he just got sent back down yesterday. He actually has replaced Kirill Marchenko on the first line after Kirill Marchenko got called up.
With 7 goals, 7 assists, and 14 points. Okay, we're going to go tiebreaker here. Can you name the player with the longest streak so far at all at any point this season?
Matthew Phillips.
No.
I don't mean that.
That's a good guess. Brett
Sini? No.
We were commenting on his team's jerseys just a little bit ago.
But it's not Matthew Phillips. Is it Jacob Pelletier?
Congratulations, Andrew.
Oh, all right, cool.
I know, a little chaotic. I kind of threw this together.
We're all about the chaos here at the Holy Grail. So
We are chaos.
All right, well, that's going to be it for the Holy Grail this week. Big thank you to Zach Fish over with the Hershey Bears for both coordinating and coming on our show. And shout out to Nicole Del Villano and Mark Letestu over in Cleveland. Nicole, for setting this up for us. Mark, for coming on the show. Just great to hear more voices across the American Hockey League. And if you want to hear more of us and our guests, please subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter You guys know it by now, at the Holy Grail, GRAHL. We also want to send a special shout out to CanuckDuck789 on Apple Podcasts for the 5-star review. Thank you so much. And of course, check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts. We have Inside the SPHL with James Hayes, bringing you guests every single week from across the SPHL. If you're looking for ECHL coverage, you can join Matthew Harding and Jason Mowles as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder while chatting with some of the team's legendary players. That was on the Rolling Thunder podcast, and it airs bi-weekly on Field Pass Hockey. And for more AHL action, we have Syracuse Speaks with Alexander Ackerman. That is a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast that focuses on maintaining a balanced perspective in the ever-shifting world of minor league hockey. And watch out in the new year. Jeremy and I are currently working on Monsters Musings, and it's looking to be making a grand comeback sometime, hopefully in January. And again, on behalf of Zach, Corey, Jeremy, and Andrew, all of us here at the Holy Grail, we hope you have an amazing week, and we'll catch you next Thursday. Bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.